Chapter 19.
Your papers? Just a moment.
The clerk took off his eyeglasses and looked at Elizabeth. Then he ceremoniously got up and went behind the wooden partition that separated his counter from the large room beyond. Graber looked after him and then glanced around. There were people between him and the exit. Go to the door, he said softly. Wait there. If you see me take off my cap, go to Polman at once. Don't worry about anything. Go at once. I'll come later. Elizabeth hesitated. Go, he said again, impatiently. Maybe the old goat has gone to get someone. We can't risk it. Wait outside.
He might want to ask me more questions.
We'll find out about that. I'll tell him you felt faint and went out for a breath of air. Go, Elizabeth. He stood at the counter and looked after her. She turned around and smiled. Then she disappeared.
Where is Fräulein Kruse?
Graber whirled around. The clerk had returned. She will be here right away. Is everything in order? The clerk nodded.
When do you want to get married?
As soon as possible. I haven't much time. My furlough is almost over.
You can get married at once if you like. The papers are ready. With soldiers, it's all simple and quick.
Graber saw the papers in the man's hand. The clerk smiled. All at once, Graber felt weak. His face flushed.
Is everything attended to?
He asked and took off his cap to wipe away the sweat.
Everything is attended to, the clerk replied. Where is Fräulein Kruse?
Graber laid his cap on the counter. He turned and looked for Elizabeth. The hall was full of people and he could not see her. Then he noticed his cap on the counter and remembered it was the signal they had agreed on.
Just a moment, he said quickly. I'll get her at once.
He pushed his way swiftly through the crowd. He hoped he could catch up with her in the street, but when he came to the exit, she was standing calmly behind a pillar, waiting.
Thank God you're here. Everything is in order. Everything is in order, Elizabeth.
They went back. The clerk handed Elizabeth her papers.
Are you the daughter of the health counselor, Kruse? He asked.
Yes.
Graber held his breath.
I know your father, the clerk said.
Elizabeth looked at him.
Have you heard anything of him?
She asked after a while.
Nothing. Haven't you heard from him at all?
No.
The clerk took off his glasses. He had short-sighted, watery blue eyes.
Let's hope for the best.
He gave Elizabeth his hand.
Good luck. I took your business under my wing and saw it through myself. You can marry today. I can make the arrangements for you, right now if you like.
Right now, Graber said. This afternoon, Elizabeth replied. Would 2 o'clock be all right?
I'll arrange it for you then. You'll have to go to the gymnasium and the high school. That's the registry office now.
Thanks.
They stood at the doorway.
Why not right now?
Graber asked.
Then nothing else can interfere.
Elizabeth smiled.
I must have a little time to get ready, Ernst. You don't understand that, do you?
Only half.
Half is enough. Come and get me at 1:45.
Graber hesitated.
It went so simply, he said then. What didn't I expect? I don't know why I've become so jumpy. Probably it was pretty ridiculous, wasn't it?
No.
I'm afraid it was.
Elizabeth shook her head.
My father thought the people who warned him were being ridiculous, too. He thought in our time nothing like that could happen, and then it did. We have had a stroke of luck, that's all, Ernst.
A few blocks away, he found a tailor's shop. A man who looked like a kangaroo was sitting there sewing a uniform.
Can I get these trousers cleaned?
Graber asked. The man looked up.
This is a tailoring establishment, not a cleaner's.
I see that. I want to have my things pressed, too.
The ones you have on?
Yes.
The tailor got up, grumbling. He examined the spot on the trousers.
It's not blood, Graber said. It's olive oil. A little benzene will take it right out.
Why don't you do it yourself if you know so much about it? Benzene doesn't help at all with spots like this.
Maybe. You must know more about it than I. Have you anything I can wear in the meantime?
He asked. The tailor went behind a curtain and came out with a pair of checked trousers and a white jacket. Graber took them.
How long will it take? I need my uniform for a wedding.
1 hour.
Graeber changed. I'll come back in an hour, then.
The kangaroo looked at him distrustfully. He had expected him to stay in the shop.
My uniform is good security, Graeber said. I won't run away.
Surprisingly, the tailor bared his teeth.
Your uniform belongs to the state, young man. But go ahead and get a haircut. You will need it if you are going to get married.
That's right.
Graeber went to a barber shop. A bony woman was on duty.
My husband is in the field, she said. I am taking his place for the time being. Sit down. Shave.
Haircut. Do you know how to do that?
Dear God, I know it so well I've almost forgotten it again. Shampoo, too? We still have excellent soap.
Yes, shampoo, too.
The woman was quite strong. She cut Graeber's hair and gave his head a thorough going over with soap and a rough hand towel.
Do you want brilliantine?
She asked.
We still have some of the French.
Graeber glanced up from a half-doze and was startled. His ears seemed to have grown, so close had his hair been clipped at the temples.
Brilliantine?
The woman asked again, peremptorily.
What does it smell like? Graeber remembered Alphonse's bath salts.
The way brilliantine smells. How else? It is French.
Graeber took the bottle and sniffed. The brilliantine smelled of old, rancid fat. The time of victories was already long past. He looked at his hair. Where it hadn't been clipped close, it stood up in tufts.
All right, brilliantine, he said, but only very little.
He paid and went back to the tailor.
You're too early, growled the kangaroo.
Graeber did not contradict him. He sat down and watched the tailor ironing. The warm air made him sleepy. The war suddenly seemed far away. Flies hummed drowsily, the iron hissed, and the little room was full of an unaccustomed and forgotten security.
That's the best I could do.
The tailor held out the trousers to Graeber. He looked at them. The spot was almost gone.
Excellent, Graeber said.
The trousers smelled of benzene, but he said nothing about that. Quickly, he put them on.
Who cut your hair?
The tailor asked.
A woman whose husband is a soldier.
It looks as though you did it yourself. Hold still a minute.
The kangaroo snipped off a few of the tufts.
So, it will do now.
What do I owe you?
The tailor waved him away.
1,000 marks or nothing at all. So, nothing. A wedding present.
Thanks. Do you know where there's a flower shop?
There's one in Spiechernstrasse.
The store was open. Two women were standing in it, bargaining with the saleswoman about a wreath.
Those are genuine fir cones, the saleswoman said. That's always expensive.
One of the women looked at her indignantly. Her soft, wrinkled cheeks trembled.
That's usury, she said. Usury! Come, Minna, we'll find cheaper wreaths somewhere else. You don't need to take it, the saleswoman announced sharply. I can get rid of my stock easily enough. At those prices? Oh, yes, at those prices. I never have enough, and I am sold out every evening, ladies. Then you're a war profiteer.
The two women stamped out. The saleswoman drew in her breath sharply as though to shout something after them. Then she turned to Graeber. She suddenly had two bright spots in her cheeks.
And you? Wreaths or a coffin blanket? You see, the stock is not large, but we have some very beautiful fur arrangements.
I don't need anything for a funeral.
What, then?
The saleswoman asked in surprise.
I would like to buy some flowers.
Flowers? I have lilies?
No lilies. Something for a wedding.
Lilies are entirely suitable for a wedding, sir. They are the symbol of innocence and virginity.
That's right, but haven't you any roses?
Roses? At this time of year? Where from? The greenhouses are all being used to grow vegetables. It's hard to get anything at all.
Graeber walked around the stall. Finally, behind a wreath in the form of a swastika, he found a bunch of jonquils.
Give me these.
The saleswoman picked up the bunch and let the water drip off.
Unfortunately, I'll have to wrap the flowers in a newspaper. I haven't anything else.
That doesn't matter.
Graeber paid for the jonquils and left.
He immediately felt uncomfortable with the flowers in his hand. Everyone seemed to be staring at him. At first he held the bouquet with the blossoms downward, then he clamped them under his arm. In doing so, he saw the paper in which they were wrapped. Under the yellow blossoms appeared the picture of a man open-mouthed in front of some sort of tribunal. It was a photograph of the presiding officer of the People's Court. He read the text. 4 persons had been put to death because they no longer believed in a German victory. Their heads had been hacked off with an axe. In the Third Reich, the guillotine had long since been discarded. It was too humane. Graeber crumpled up the paper and threw it away. The clerk had been right. The registry office was in the gymnasium of the high school. The registrar sat in front of a row of climbing ropes, the lower ends of which had been hooked back against the wall. Between them hung a portrait of Hitler in uniform, beneath it a swastika with the German eagle. They had to wait. A middle-aged soldier was in front of them. There was a woman with him, wearing on her breast a gold brooch in the form of a sailing ship. The man was very excited, the woman calm. She smiled at Elisabeth as though they were fellow conspirators.
"Marriage witnesses," said the registrar. "Where are your marriage witnesses?"
The soldier stammered. He had none.
"I thought with war marriages you didn't need any," he finally said.
"That would be nice, wouldn't it? With us, order prevails."
The soldier turned to Graeber.
"Could you perhaps help us, comrade? You and the young lady? Just your signatures."
"Of course. Then you can sign for us, too. I didn't think I needed any either."
"Who thinks of anything like that?"
"Everyone who knows his duty as a citizen,"
the registrar announced cuttingly. He obviously took the omission as a personal insult.
"Do you by any chance go into battle without a gun?"
The soldier stared at him.
"That's something entirely different. After all, a witness is not a gun."
"I didn't say he was. It was simply a comparison. Well, what about it now? Have you your witnesses?"
"My comrade here and the lady."
The registrar looked at Graeber peevishly. It obviously did not please him to have the matter settled so simply.
"Have you identification papers?"
he asked Graeber, hopefully.
"Yes, here. We want to get married ourselves."
The official growled and picked up the papers. He entered Elisabeth's and Graeber's names in the register.
"Sign here."
All 4 signed.
"I congratulate you in the name of the Führer,"
the registrar said frostily afterwards to the soldier and his wife. Then he turned to Graeber.
"Your witnesses?"
"Here."
Graeber pointed to the 2. The registrar shook his head.
"I can only accept 1 of them," he announced.
"Why? You took both of us, after all."
"You were still single. But these 2 are now a married couple. You have to have 2 independent persons as witnesses. A wife does not qualify."
Graeber did not know whether the official was right or simply trying to make difficulties.
"Isn't there someone here who can do it?" he asked. "Perhaps another clerk?"
"It's not my place to take care of such matters," the registrar announced in cold triumph. "If you have no witnesses, you can't get married."
Graeber looked around.
"What do you need?" asked a middle-aged man who had come up and was listening. "A marriage witness? Take me."
He stood beside Elisabeth. The official examined him coldly.
"Have you your papers?"
"Of course."
The man casually drew out a passport and tossed it on the table. The registrar read it, rose to his feet, and yelped,
"Heil Hitler, Herr Group Leader!"
"Heil Hitler,"
the group leader replied carelessly.
"And let's not have any more play acting, understand? What's the matter with you behaving towards soldiers this way?"
"Very good, Herr Group Leader. Will you please be so kind as to sign here?"
Graeber saw that SS Group Leader Hildebrandt was his second witness. The first was Engineer Klotz. Hildebrandt shook hands with Elisabeth and Graeber, and then with Klotz and his wife as well. The registrar got 2 copies of Hitler's Mein Kampf from behind the climbing ropes, which looked as though they had been arranged for a hanging.
"A gift from the state,"
he announced sourly, staring after Hildebrandt.
"Civilian clothes," he said. "How's anyone to know?"
They went past the leather exercise horse and the parallel bars to the exit. "When do you have to go back?" Graeber asked the engineer.
"Tomorrow,"
Klotz winked.
"We've been intending to do it all along.
Why make a present of anything to the state? If I get killed, at least Maria will be taken care of. Or don't you think so?
Yes, I do.
Klotz unbuckled his knapsack.
You helped me out, comrade. I have a good Brunswick sausage here. Take it and enjoy it. Don't say a word. I am a farmer. I have enough. I really intended to give it to the registrar.
Just imagine, that bastard.
Not to him, whatever happens. Graber took the sausage.
Here, accept this book in exchange. I have nothing else to give you as a wedding present. But, comrade, I just got one myself.
That doesn't matter. You will be twice as well off now. You can give one to your wife.
Klotz looked at the copy of Mein Kampf.
It's a nice binding, he said. Don't you really want to keep it yourself?
I don't need it. In the house where we live, there's one bound in leather with silver clasps.
Of course, that's something else again. Well then, take care of yourself.
You too.
Graber caught up with Elisabeth.
I didn't say anything to Alphonse Binding about today because I didn't want him as a witness, he said. I didn't want an SA commander's name beside ours. Now we've got an SS group leader instead.
That's what happens to good resolutions,
Elisabeth laughed.
In return, you've been able to trade the Bible of the movement for a Brunswick sausage. It evens out.
They walked across the marked plots. The monument that showed only Bismarck's feet had been straightened. Pigeons circled above the Marienkirche. Graber looked at Elisabeth.
I really ought to be very happy, he thought.
But he did not feel it quite as much as he had expected. They were lying in a clearing in the woods outside the city. Violet haze hung between the tree trunks. Along the edges of the clearing, primroses and violets were in blossom. A light breeze began to blow. Elisabeth suddenly sat up.
What's that over there? It looks like an enchanted forest. Or am I dreaming? The trees are all hung with silver. Do you see it too?
Graber nodded.
It looks like angels' hair. What is it?
Tinfoil. Or very thin aluminum that has been cut up into narrow strips. Something like the silver paper that comes around chocolate.
The whole forest is covered with it. Where does it come from?
They toss it out of airplanes in bundles. It interferes with radio communication. I believe it makes it impossible to determine where the planes are. Something like that. When the narrow strips of foil flutter down through the air, they interrupt or distort the radio waves.
Too bad,
Elisabeth said.
It looks like a Christmas forest. And now it's nothing but the war again. I thought we had finally got away from that for once.
They looked across. The trees around the clearing were covered with strips that fluttered from their twigs, twisting and sparkling in the breeze. The sun broke through the mountainous clouds and transformed the woods into a glittering fairyland. What once had fluttered down in the midst of ravening death and the shrill howl of destruction now hung silent and shiny on the trees and had become silver and a shimmering, and the memory of childhood stories and the great festival of peace. Elisabeth leaned against Graber.
Let's take the forest for what it seems and not for what it means.
Good. Graber drew Polman's book out of his coat pocket. We can't take a wedding trip, Elisabeth, but Polman gave me this book. It's a picture book of Switzerland. Sometime after the war, we'll go there and make up for everything.
Switzerland? The place where there still are lights at night?
Graber opened the book.
For a long time now, there haven't been any lights even in Switzerland. I heard that at the barracks. Our government demanded it. We sent them an ultimatum, insisting that their lights must be blacked out, and Switzerland had to comply.
Why?
We had no objection as long as we were the only ones flying over Switzerland. But now the others fly over too, with bombs for Germany.
Wherever there are lighted cities, the flyers can check their position more easily. That's the reason.
So that too is finished?
Yes. But we know one thing at least. When we get to Switzerland sometime after the war, everything will be exactly as it is in this book. If we had a picture book of Italy or France or England, that wouldn't be so.
Nor with a picture book of Germany.
Nor with a picture book of Germany. They leafed through the book.
Mountains,
Elisabeth said.
Isn't there anything in Switzerland but mountains? Aren't there any warm southern places? Of course. Here's Italian Switzerland. Locarno. Wasn't there once a great peace conference there? Where they decided war would never be necessary again?
I think so.
That didn't last long.
No.
Here is Locarno. Just look at it. Palms, old churches, and there is the Lago Maggiore. And here are islands and azaleas and mimosa and sun and peace.
Yes. What's the name of that place?
Porto Ronco.
Good,
Elizabeth said sleepily, laying the book down.
We'll make a note of that. We'll go there later on. Just now, I don't want to take any more trips.
Graber clapped the book shut. He looked at the glistening silver in the trees, and then he took Elizabeth in his arms. He felt her come toward him, and with her the floor of the forest, grass and roots, and reddish flower with delicate narrow leaves that grew larger and larger until it blotted out the horizon, and his eyes closed. The wind died. It grew dark rapidly. From the distance came a low rumbling. Artillery, Graber thought, half asleep. But where? Where am I? Where is the front? And then, relieved as he felt Elizabeth beside him, where are the gun emplacements around here? It must be target practice. Elizabeth moved.
Where are they? She murmured. Will they bomb us or fly on?
It isn't airplanes. The rumbling came again. Graber straightened up and listened.
It's not bombs and not artillery and not airplanes, Elizabeth, he said.
It is a thunderstorm. Isn't it still too early for that?
There are no rules for thunderstorms. Now they saw the first lightning. It seemed pale and artificial after the man-made tempests they knew, and even the thunder was hardly to be compared with the roar of massed planes, let alone a heavy bombing. The rain began. They ran across the clearing and into the fir trees. Shadows seemed to race with them. The rustling of the rain in the treetops above them was like the applause of a distant crowd. And in the pale light, Graber saw that Elizabeth's hair was covered with silver strands that had been brushed from the branches. They were like a net in which the lightning flashes were caught. They came out of the forest and found a covered streetcar platform where a number of people were huddled. A couple of SS men stood with them. They were young, and they stared at Elizabeth. After half an hour, the rain stopped.
I no longer know where we are, Graber said. Which way do we go?
To the right.
They crossed the street and turned off into a twilight avenue. Ahead of them, at one side of the street, a long row of men were busy laying pipes in the half-darkness. They were wearing striped suits. Elizabeth was suddenly alert. She turned off the street in the direction of the workmen. She walked along slowly, very close to them, studying them as though searching for someone. Now Graber saw that the men had numbers on their clothes. They were prisoners from the concentration camp who worked quickly and silently without glancing up. Their heads were like skulls, and their clothes hung limp on their emaciated bodies. Two had collapsed and lay in front of a boarded-up soft drink stand.
"Hey there!"
an SS man shouted.
"Stay away! You're not allowed to go there!"
Elizabeth pretended she had not heard him. She just walked faster and kept peering into the dead faces of the prisoners.
"Come back! You there, lady! At once! Damn it, can't you hear me?"
The SS man came up, cursing.
"What's the matter?"
Graber asked.
"What's the matter? Have you mud in your ears, or is something else the matter with you?"
Graber saw a second SS man approaching. He was a senior troop leader. Graber did not dare call to Elizabeth. He knew that she would not turn back.
"We are looking for something," he said to the SS man.
"What? Come on, speak up!"
"We lost something here, a brooch. It's a sailing ship made of diamonds. We came through here late yesterday, and we must have dropped it. Have you seen it by any chance?"
"What?"
Graber repeated his lie. He saw that Elizabeth had gone past half the row.
"Nothing has been found here," the senior troop leader declared.
"That's just a driveling excuse," the SS man said. "Have you your papers?"
Graber looked at him for a while in silence. He would have liked to knock him down. The SS man was not more than 20 years old. Steinbrenner, he thought. Heine.
the same type. I not only have papers, but I have very good papers, he said then. Besides that, SS Group Leader Hildebrandt is a close friend of mine, in case you're interested.
The SS man laughed derisively.
Anything else? The Führer, too, no doubt?
Not the Führer. Elisabeth had almost reached the end of the line. Graeber drew his marriage certificate out of his pocket with deliberation.
Come over here with me under the lamppost. Can you read that? The signature of my marriage witness? And the date? Today, as you see. Any more questions?
The SS man stared at the paper. The senior troop leader looked over his shoulder.
That's Hildebrandt's signature, he agreed. I know it. Nevertheless, you are not allowed to walk here. It's forbidden. We can't do anything about it. I am sorry about your brooch.
Elisabeth had finished.
So am I, Graeber replied. Naturally, we won't go on looking if it's forbidden. Orders are orders.
He walked on quickly to reach Elisabeth, but the senior troop leader stayed beside him.
Perhaps we'll still find the brooch, he said. Where shall we send it?
To Hildebrandt. That's the simplest thing.
Good, the senior troop leader said respectfully. Have you found anything? He asked Elisabeth.
She stared at him as though she had just been awakened.
I have explained to the officer here about the brooch we lost yesterday, Graeber said quickly. If it turns up, he'll send it to Hildebrandt.
Thank you,
Elisabeth replied in amazement. The senior troop leader looked her in the face and nodded.
You can depend on it. We in the SS are cavaliers.
Elisabeth threw a glance toward the prisoners. The senior troop leader observed it.
If one of those swine has hidden it, we'll find it all right, he declared gallantly. We'll inspect them till they drop.
Elisabeth quivered.
I'm not sure I lost it here. It could just as well have been higher up in the woods. I really think it may have been there.
The senior troop leader grinned. She blushed.
It probably was in the woods, she repeated.
The senior troop leader's grin broadened.
Naturally, we are not in charge there.
Graeber was standing close to the emaciated skull of one of the bowed prisoners. He put his hand in his pocket, pulled out a package of cigarettes, and in turning let it fall near the prisoner.
Many thanks, he said to the senior troop leader. We'll look in the woods tomorrow. It could easily have happened there.
No need for thanks. Heil Hitler, and warmest congratulations on your wedding.
Thanks.
They walked in silence side by side until the prisoners were out of sight. Like a flight of flamingos, a row of clouds, mother of pearl and rose, drifted across the sky, which was now clear.
I should not have gone over there, Elisabeth said. I know that.
It doesn't matter. That's the way people are. Barely out of one scrape and we run the risk of another.
She nodded.
You saved us with the brooch, and with Hildebrandt. You're a really good liar.
That, Graeber said, is the thing our country has learned to perfection in the last 10 years.
And now let's go home. I have the absolute certified right to move into your apartment. I've lost my home in the barracks. This afternoon, I moved out of Bending's place. Now at last I want to go home. I want to lie luxuriously in bed while you dash off to work early in the morning to earn bread for the family.
I don't have to go to the factory tomorrow. I have 2 days vacation.
And you haven't told me till now?
I wasn't going to tell you until tomorrow morning.
Graeber shook his head.
No surprises, please. We haven't time for them. We need every minute for rejoicing, and we'll begin right away. Have we enough for breakfast, or shall I make another trip to Alphonse?
We have enough.
All right. We'll have a noisy breakfast tomorrow. To the strains of the Hohenfriedberger March, if you like. And then when Frau Leeser comes roaring in full of moral indignation, we'll push our marriage lines under the informer's disappointed snout. What a face she'll make when she sees the name of our SS witness!
Elisabeth smiled.
Perhaps she may not make so much of a row after all. Day before yesterday, when she gave me that pound of sugar you left for me, she suddenly said you were an upstanding fellow. Heaven knows what produced the sudden change. Do you know?
No idea. Corruption, probably. That's the other thing our country has learned to perfection in the last 10 years.